Hey Fresh Capital listeners, with the collapse of FTX all over the news, we're taking a look at the biggest crypto trading exchange on the market, Binance. At the top, we explain what happened to FTX and the role Binance played in bringing its competitor down. We then zoom out to explain what is happening in the crypto world right now and whether we think exchanges like Binance and FTX will succeed in the future. This is a great episode for anyone who's been following the news of FTX's collapse. Keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn about companies and investing. My name is Dan. Joining me, as always, Albert. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm going good. We had a bit of a break last week, both kind of out of Sydney, which is nice. I went to Canberra, you were in Melbourne. Welcome back.
I was. Yes, thank you. I was at a friend's engagement party, which was, fun to be at. I'm trying to find a form of dress which isn't, you know, just beige chinos and a shirt jacket combo. But, I just dressed up like a typical lawyer and wore it for that event.
Can you go a bit like out of left field and wear like a nice tie or like a different colored jacket?
Well, I was out of left field because I wasn't wearing iron boots, but that's as far as I went off it.
Very good. I don't know if we can tie RMs to what we're going to talk about now, unfortunately, unless you can come up with a way.
Well, people who have held on to their RM Williams boots from 5-6 years ago, I think are benefiting pretty well from the rise in inflation, rising costs of RM boots. Same way, people holding on to their cryptos might be benefiting as well, Albert. Is that a seamless transition to Binance?
I think I don't know if anyone who's held on to crypto is really benefiting.
Should have held on to their RM boots. But Albert, do you want to introduce Binance and why we're talking about it in this week's episode?
For sure. Binance is one of the world's largest crypto exchanges. So when I say crypto exchange, it's where people can buy, sell, trade cryptocurrencies, as well as kind of other products associated with Web3, like NFTs. They're also a very kind of mature exchange. They do other things that we'll talk about, like derivatives, crypto loans, and things like that. You can also get a Binance card that you can use to spend your crypto IRL. Just at the top here, Dan, it's probably worth talking about because Binance and crypto has been obviously in the news a lot, but in the news very recently because this week, one of the other largest exchanges, FTX, has just filed for bankruptcy.
Yes, I've actually had some of the appointed administrators emailing me over the last week or so.
Oh, no. Were you in FTX?
No, I wasn't. I had had an account, but I hadn't actually invested any funds, which was quite lucky. And funnily enough, the friend I was going to the engagement party with in Melbourne, he's a bit of an insolvency lawyer, so we're having a good chat about it. Really, really interesting case. I mean, let's just hit it at the top. FTX is a competitor to Binance, but in terms of scale, you know, there's FTX, Coinbase, predominantly American-based, but obviously of accounts across the world, but maybe 10% of the sort of market share compared to Binance. Binance is absolutely the leader. And when FTX was having trouble, Binance was in the news a lot because their founder, CZ, he was offering to potentially buy up FTX and merge the two. But then after looking at the books, looking behind the scenes, saw it was an absolute mess, pulled out, and that really just escalated a run on FTX, which ran it into oblivion.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I don't know whether we need to really talk about what happened with FTX in detail. But, you know, it looks like, I just read the bankruptcy filing yesterday when that came out, like a lot of fraud. And so maybe it's worth kind of talking about FTX just very briefly, because that kind of helps illustrate also what Binance does. So on an exchange like FTX or Binance, people will buy and sell crypto. And so you can leave your crypto on the exchange or you can send it to your own wallet. So in the same way that like, you've got a physical wallet that you can put money into or like your bank account. Some people just left their crypto coins and their tokens on the exchange. This is a bit funny because it kind of ruins the whole purpose of crypto, which is meant to be decentralized, but you've left it on a centralized exchange. And again, we'll talk about this these challenges in more detail. But because people left it on the exchange, FTX had access to that, and then they were using people's crypto, so the coins left on exchange, and they were lending it out to companies. They also had, or SBF, who was the CEO and founder of FTX, had like a research group called Alameda, and they were using, you know, their tokens and customer tokens and lending them out, hedging and things like that. Kind of all sorts of fraud that you're not meant to be doing with customer like tokens, customer money effectively. They effectively went through a crunch. Binance saw that they were doing this. They started to sell down all the FTX tokens, which then led to a huge liquidity issue, meaning FTX didn't have any cash, and then which tanked like the FTX token, FTT, which then led to FTX becoming bankrupt. That's like a too long didn't read, but basically there was quite a lot of fraud involved. FTX were doing things they weren't meant to. Binance saw this, sold out of their position, which then crashed FTX.
Albert, I'm going to jump in and save you here. Alleged fraud. We'll put a little asterisk on that one there. But I think this is a really good way to illustrate the role of Binance and how it's, I guess, equivalent to some of our traditional financial institutions like a bank. So it's not necessarily fraud for a financial institution, say a bank. I've deposited 100K with them. It's okay for them to use that money. They'll loan it out. They'll use other products they'll use that money for and do other things with. The difference is between FTX and a traditional bank, banks are far more regulated. So I think in Australia, there's sort of a rule of thumb, which they can turn over your money about 7 times. So if you've deposited 100K with them, then they can do certain things to it up to an amount of about 700K. And the reason for that kind of limit means that if I just pull out my money, they can then use other people's money to keep them afloat, keep liquidity, as Albert was saying. But if they say reinvested my money 15, 20 times over, that's at a multiple where now they're really, really sensitive to customers pulling out their money, which is obviously a case where they could fail at sort of any moment. The reason FTX was such a mess was because they were just funneling people's money out the door, leveraging it, I think, 25 times over, which made them so sensitive to anyone sort of pulling out their money in a big way. And that's what CZ, the Binance founder, kind of did in a very public forum, which kicked off the run. So I think the key thing here, if we just boil it all down, Albert, is there's this trust issue. Like if you want to be investing in, or if you believe these crypto exchange platforms are going to be successful in the future, there has to be that degree of trust. And one of those ways is going to be regulation. But another, as you suggested, is this idea of crypto wallets, which I really want to get into. So Binance in 2020 released a sort of user index survey, which had a lot of respondents, you know, over 60,000 respondents. And it found that about 60% of users actually kept their digital assets on the exchange. The remainder did it in other forms, you know, downloading it, cold storage, etc. So I wanted to sort of get your take on that and dive into this. When trust is such a big issue.
Yeah, this is a really good point. I think the flip side to this, and this is what we were talking about before we started recording, is that crypto wallets actually suck in terms of user experience. I don't know anyone who, if you're listening to this, you've got a crypto wallet, whether it's like hot or cold storage. Like, you know, I've got, use a set number of wallets like MetaMask and Phantom and things like that to store my crypto. But basically, when you buy crypto on exchange, you can either leave it on the exchange, like you said, Dan, or you can send it to a wallet. But when you send it to a wallet, you've got this like really long wallet code that's like 30, you know, characters, letters, numbers long, like BGX5, 19, 23, 5, 6, 7. Like, I just made that up. That's not my crypto wallet. And so it feels...
Someone make a run on Albert's account.
So while it's very similar to like a pay ID where you're sending money to someone's pay ID, because it's just like such a long string, it's hard to like verify and check and things like that. And then it costs money to send things to a crypto wallet. It costs gas fees, like transaction processing fees. It doesn't cost you money to send money to someone else via PayID. So that doesn't feel particularly good either. So there's kind of these perverse incentives that lead to people leaving their money on exchanges because the user experience is so bad.
So I get all of that, but what I'm kind of looking into is the future. And obviously Cathie Wood, very sort of well-known investor for innovative and future-facing tech opportunities, they've got like ARK Capital. They've got this whole section on the potential of digital wallets, which as I was researching for this episode, really, I think, kind of gelled with my thinking around the cryptocurrency exchanges. One way of looking at them is just purely if you have a lot of users exchanging, transacting on your platform, you can do well. You'll take a clip of it. You know, Binance's founder said that about 90% of their revenue, which is about $2 billion or something last year, $5 billion last year, that they're just 90% of their revenue is based on those transaction fees. But I think there's this really unseen opportunity with digital wallets where if you're thinking about the customer acquisition cost of financial products more generally, it's really, really low. You know, there's something like 230 million people in the US with a digital wallet, which is a crazy number, which means that probably multiple people have multiple wallets. But the acquisition cost there is $20. If you're thinking about what Amex, Visa, MasterCard are paying to acquire a customer for their credit cards, you know, it's anywhere between $250 and $1,500. If you're thinking about banks, retail banks trying to get people to get a checking account, $350 to $1,500. Brokerage platforms, insurance platforms, all of them are paying huge amounts of money to get customers, and digital wallets are doing it at a fraction. So there's this really interesting use case of digital wallets being the entry point to then sell credit card, checking account, brokerage, all these other products too, which is just like, to me, a really interesting opportunity, particularly as a lot of new users are coming in. Maybe they're unbanked. They don't have bank accounts. We're talking about Asia. And now they're entering into the financial ecosystem through the wallet.
Yeah. Good call out, Dan. That's really interesting. I think what I put back to you, which is what a lot of skeptics will also say, is like, if I have an account with Amex or MasterCard or, you know, whatever, like Citibank, you know, UBS, ING, ANZ, whatever, how is that digital account where I predominantly interface with my bank account via the web or via mobile different to a digital wallet in the sense of MetaMask or Phantom? Because for a lot of people, it's like digital in that it's cloud-based. Why are they different and why does a digital wallet actually matter?
Oh, I don't think, like, I think it's just terminology. Like, as an example, the Cash App, which is Square's sort of digital wallet, you can trade some cryptos on it. So to me, it's just digital wallet is a use all term. It's white label. It's just a spectrum of what the potential uses and products you can use within that digital wallet. And the interesting thing is, like, I think if you look at Venmo, Cash App, and how they're valued in terms of value per customer, you know, $250 per customer for Venmo, $700 per customer for Cash App, because of the types of transactions that they're doing. You know, it's user to user, pretty low value margin. If you look at something like Robinhood, though, which is now sort of investment trading as well, that's valued at $1,000 per user. So four times that, they're extracting four times the value from their users as Venmo is. So if you're just thinking about it from that perspective, you can really ratchet up the value you can get from your digital wallet, depending on if you're adding cryptos into the mix.
I'm glad you used Cash App as an example, because that's a really good example of like what a good on-ramp to a digital wallet is. And I actually challenge that they're not all the same white level. Where like in crypto, a digital wallet is on-chain. And so that there's some aspect of that that is recorded in a blockchain, which means that you've got ownership or there's a record of your ownership that you can see and everyone else can verify. Like if you know my crypto address, you can go and search up my crypto address and see everything I own and store in my wallet. And that is something that everyone on chain can see. And I think there's the difference is that for something like Cash App, they've integrated the on-chain aspect relatively seamlessly so that it doesn't really interface with a lot of customers. But that's not necessarily true with other wallets like Phantom and MetaMask, where the on-chain aspect is so in your face. And unless you're kind of like deep into crypto, it's not really a nice user experience because you've got to deal with like all the like terminology and the protocols that come with being a crypto participant.
Yeah. I mean, if I were to summarize this, I think it's, you know, my take is simply there's no such thing as sort of crypto institutions in the future. It's all just going to be financial institutions. And Binance and some of these other crypto labeled entities at the moment, they're going to be most successful if they can just become the consumer financial dashboard of the future. Like if I open up my Binance account and that is like my financial dashboard for everything, crypto, trading, stocks, cash, bank accounts, that's going to be an extremely useful, extremely powerful product.
Yep. Let's quickly talk more about Binance in depth and then talk about kind of how it's differed from other things like Coinbase, which we've covered on the pod. So, you know, very similar to Coinbase, Binance is a crypto exchange where people can buy and sell, trade different cryptocurrencies and tokens. They've also got, you know, a couple of like more institutional features that Coinbase doesn't have. So they've got like high frequency trading of crypto. They've got derivatives and futures. You can do staking. You can do crypto loans. You can do what they call like liquidity farming, which is when you like give out your crypto and then, you know, use that as like a crypto pool for liquidity. I won't go too much into it because you can, you know, research this in your own time. This is like a super risky part of finance. So if you are interested, it's probably you have to do your own research. It's not like do your own research, like genuinely like really understand the risks and the protocols and the terminology involved. But I think what really sets apart crypto versus, say, a Coinbase is just the sheer volume of trades that occur on Binance. So Binance, you know, CZ, their founder, started working at the Tokyo Stock Exchange. It's where he learned about financial markets. He then went to work at Bloomberg, and then he started his own high-frequency trading business. And so because he has this background in financial markets and high-frequency trading, he really saw the potential in high-frequency trading and the speed of transactions, which is taken to Binance. So Binance have their own blockchain and smart token called Binance Smart Chain and Binance Token, BNB. They use that to facilitate transactions. Because they've got their own blockchain, they can facilitate transactions much faster than other cryptocurrency exchanges, which kind of gives them an edge over things like Coinbase. The other thing that's also worth calling out is that Binance have just like a lot of different tokens and cryptocurrencies. And so if you want to trade and buy very niche and specific tokens, you can do that on Binance, where Coinbase probably has a high bar in terms of things that allow to trade on Coinbase, and partly because they're tied to more like retail traders and retail users, but also because Coinbase is like a regulated institution because they are public. So there's a bit of like regulatory involvement there on Coinbase's behalf.
Yeah, and I do want to clean up. So like I said before, in terms of their revenue, in 2020, it was $5 billion and they were making about a $2 billion profit. That these are sort of general announcements by Binance. They're obviously not public, so we don't have the full reports. And in 2021, they're sort of reported to be about $20 billion in revenue. So a huge spike in that 1 year term. Huge, huge company. I'll just sort of add a couple more contextual items to what you've laid out there, Albert, which I found really interesting. Again, coming from their own global crypto user survey, about 95% of users, male. They earn on average about $25,000 USD, which is a little bit less than what I would have thought, to be honest. About 41% have got undergraduate degrees. And interesting, when we talk about, you know, why they're choosing particular platforms, comparing Coinbase, FTX, Binance, the number one sort of factor was security, as you'd imagine, then followed by UI, UX, as you suggested, Albert, and then followed by, you know, the the trading possibilities, you know, what tokens, etc. they've got. So all really important factors as to why I think Binance has been successful, maybe less so about, you know, the male demographics, etc. But just thinking about, they've led with having a bit more secure features than something like FTX, which is why they've withstood. They've got, you know, debatably, but generally a pretty good UI, UX compared to their competitors. And then lastly, like, they just have the most amount of tokens, et cetera, that you can trade. In the US, they're restricted a little bit more. You know, I think they've got about 65 cryptocurrencies available in the US. But then if you're not in the US, you got access to like 365 plus. So a huge range that you can sample.
Yeah. And obviously in an industry like crypto, like, security is like one of the most important things. Like, we've just seen what can happen with, you know, FTX. You know, there's obviously been a lot of like noise around crypto. There's been hacks and things like that. And so this element of security and trust is almost always paramount with any financial institution. Like, people don't really think about like, do I trust my bank? But inherently, like, you do, because people don't worry about your bank going under or your bank doing something particularly dodgy. And so because they implicitly think about that, or explicitly, sorry, there's like this trusted element with financial institutions, even though for some reason, like, a lot of people don't really think of financial institutions as like, yeah, I trust a banker, but, you know, you store your money on them, in the same way that people have obviously trusted and hold Binance to a high regard in terms of security and trust in an incredibly risky and like untrustworthy, for lack of a better word, industry like crypto, where there's a lot of people who are doing, you know, pretty questionable things.
This is a really important point, particularly in the context of our pod, Albert. You know, we talk about the East versus West comparisons. Crypto users across the world are very, very different. And when you talk about trust in financial institutions, Albert, if you're coming from Australia, if you're coming from America, you know, GFC aside, there is a very high institutional trust. And what Binance's survey has found is actually a lower institutional trust correlates with a higher confidence in crypto, which makes sense intuitively, because such a big part of the crypto narrative is decentralized, getting away from institutions, disrupting it, etc. So when you think of Binance as being more of an Eastern platform, and they're definitely servicing customers in countries and jurisdictions which have, you know, probably less trustworthy financial institutions, government institutions, I can see why they've made such a killing in terms of getting users compared to a Coinbase, which is predominantly based in the US. So I think that really is a bit of a tailwind based on where they've located themselves and the types of users they're targeting.
It's so crazy when you see what happened with FTX, and I kind of always will draw on this comparison because obviously it's just happened in the news, but they used celebrities like Tom Brady and Steph Curry and things like that to create trust, because yep. You've had these people endorsing FTX. They had these giant like Super Bowl ads. They had all these sponsorships. And so they've simulated trust, or they've started to try to build trust in public perception in not only crypto, but FTX as an institution, which to me is like quite interesting and shocking, especially with everything that's happened. Because obviously, like, there's the alleged fraud, you know, they've filed for bankruptcy. And now I think, you know, all these athletes and you know, superstars and things like that, celebrities are being sued. But it's a really interesting point where, like, trust in the financial institution is actually like a negative signal for consumers when it comes to crypto.
What do you want to hit next, Albert?
Look, I think there's probably two really interesting things to talk about. First is just like generally the risks with crypto, which I know, Dan, you love talking about risks. So I think that there's definitely a lot of risks that we can talk about crypto more broadly, and then kind of Binance more specifically. And then I think the other thing is just like, you know, well, when you have a lot of these institutions, like historic financial institutions, like, you know, the RBA is looking to digital currency, MasterCard, things like that look into digital currency. Is there a role for someone like Binance in a world where everything is potentially digital currency?
Yeah, I think these two can actually kind of fold in hand, because one of the big things or points of contention between FTX as founder and Binance's founder, was, as you're saying, Albert, FTX started going on this huge run of getting like celebrities, etc. But at the same time, they were doing huge donations to the Democrats and the Biden campaign. They were the second largest donator for these midterm elections. And Sam Bankman-Fried, you know, he was appearing in front of Congress, lobbying behind the scenes for regulations and other things, and actually kind of bad-mouthing Binance and what they're doing there. So there's this really interesting mix between public perception trust, but also trust with the regulators. And if I had to sort of stargaze in the future, look into my crystal ball, I think this is one of those kind of events which really tars the industry. And, you know, you think about who our regulators are, who our lawmakers are, they're old, they don't really understand what's going on, but they would have read all of this news and it will confirm pre-existing biases. And anytime I think Binance or some of these institutions go to lobby for easier regulations, maybe even just common sense regulations based on their understanding technology, they're going to be met with this skepticism that, you know, they're these crooks that are looking to take advantage of citizens, etc. What does that manifest into? My personal thesis is, I think digital currencies are all going to be government issued. Like, same as in China, I think this highlights the risk to citizens, and politicians are going to be very risk averse to that. They're going to really make sure that they own or severely regulate the currencies, which to me doesn't spell the end of cryptocurrencies, but it just puts it into a different use case. Like, I don't think it's going to be the case that you're going to go to the local store and use Bitcoin to buy something. I think you're going to be using, you know, the Australian official crypto to buy something. And those are going to be very different things, or mean different things, for Binance in the future.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's funny, the ironic thing is, if regulators had spent more time in the space, they probably could have regulated crypto such that, you know, something like FTX didn't happen, or couldn't have happened, or could have been, you know, caught ahead of its bankruptcy and everything. And so because there was limited regulation, this is why this could happen. I think regulation is good for crypto, even though it goes against, you know, the ethos of what it means to be decentralized. Like, you can't, you really can't have a decentralized cryptocurrency exchange, because people need a place to either trade. People don't want to be storing, you know, wallets and things like that. Like, it's just, it's almost impossible to manage nodes at scale for crypto. And so I definitely agree that you can see a future where existing financial institutions move towards digital currencies on chain, and then leverage that technology. I think the key to making that happen, though, is that it can't be painted as cryptocurrency or Web3. It just has to be, this is like the new digital currency, or this is how people use this currency. Like, it just needs to be integrated seamlessly with the technology without the dress of the technology. Because until you do that, there's always going to be this like skepticism around crypto. There's always going to be this underlying like fear. And so because it's now been tainted, and it probably will continue to be tainted, unfortunately, you need to kind of abstract away the cryptocurrency layer for it to actually be accepted more broadly.
I want to double click on this, because, you know, what would be the advice you give to people who are thinking about crypto, in crypto at the moment? And, you know, this isn't the hardcore crypto people, this is more at the general level. And, you know, I was listening to some really interesting commentary actually on the Bill Simmons podcast, Albert, and he had Derek Thompson on. And one of the things they were talking about is, what is the life-changing crypto product that has, or technology that has earned people money? At the moment, it doesn't really exist. Like, people have gotten rich and gotten poor off the currency trading itself. But if you're talking about, you know, something like AI technology, etc., you know, there's actual products based on the underlying technology where there's whole companies with thousands of employees at the moment that are making money, making a difference. The crypto world doesn't really have that. And Binance isn't that either. Like, Binance very much is just an old school platform, which is trading cryptos, new forms of currencies on the platform. what you're talking about, Albert, and offline you're telling me about, you know, some use cases that Reddit's using for seamlessly integrating blockchain technology as distinct from cryptos. If I'm telling people, you know, who are interested in the space, I'd say look for when the underlying technology is being used and who's getting rich off that. Don't just look at who's getting rich off Bitcoin, Ethereum, like the currencies themselves, because those are two very different indicators to look out for and try to track.
I think I challenge that though, because if you are using an AI-based product, you don't know that there's AI. The AI layer's actually been abstracted away. Right? There's AI's being used and has been used for a lot of different things over the past kind of couple of years and even kind of decade with early emergence of AI. But no one looks at a product and understands that there's like machine learning and like heavy statistics and AI that's been used to show me that, like in, like advertising as like a use case for that, like which ads are shown to me and things like that. Like you just see the ad, like the AI layer's been abstracted away completely. And that's the same for the internet. Everyone uses the internet. There's not many people who know how it works. You just know that there's a really easy on-ramp to the internet called Chrome or Firefox or, you know, Edge or whatever. You go to that on-ramp, you type in google.com, you can search whatever you want, right? The actual technology of the internet has been completely abstracted away so that no one really knows what it is or sees how it works, understand how it works. And that's where crypto needs to get to, is that you've got these really easy on-ramps. You don't understand, or the technology layer has been abstracted away for most people. And that's how it gains mass adoption. And that's true for, like, say, financial services. Like, do you really understand the nuances or when you what happens with a bank? When you put your money into a bank or you get your pay deposited and things like that. But you just know you can, like, Face ID into your bank app and you can see how much money you have. And then you can tap and go. Like, all that stuff's been abstracted away. And that's the point that you want to get crypto to.
No, I think we're saying the same thing, you know, because when you think about a car, it's the same thing. I don't understand how the engine works, but I know it's in there under the hood. It's doing something and it's powering the vehicle. And it's the vehicle that I'm interested in. That's the consumer product that I'm buying.
For sure.
And in the same way, like crypto at the moment, like you're buying the currency, but you're not, what's the product that you're buying? Like, where is the product that I'm opening my phone at and is run on blockchain, etc.? Like, that's what I think we need to get to. Like, I think we're completely aligned. We need, like, the retail consumable products, easy to use, intuitive. You don't need to know about blockchain. You don't need to have a 30-digit passcode or anything like that. And at the moment, I just don't think the market's awash with those kind of products. But that's what I'd be looking out for. I think that's where the opportunities are.
Yeah, I think you also have to consider that this is really an industry that is, like, 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah.
Like, NFTs are, like, really, like, I know they've been around since, like, 2017, but these are, again, like, industries that are, like 2 or 3 years old. Amazon has been around since the 90s. And so it takes a really long time for, like, this technology to be adopted and in actual use cases. And it's starting to get there with, like, you know, basic gaming use cases and you know, digital art and things like that. But it's going to be a long time for someone to, like, see a crypto product that's, like, mass marketed. And then by then, it's just going to be a regular product. Like, it's not a crypto gaming product. It's just gaming because the crypto aspect's been abstracted away. So if you're looking for, like, how's this underlying technology actually made someone super rich, like, it doesn't even matter because that layer of technology has been abstracted away.
Yeah, and it's about looking through the noise. And this is something that you have to do in your industry a lot, Albert, is, you know, it's cyclical depending on the year cycle. You know, everything was about mobility at one point. Every pitch deck you'd receive has got AI at another point because they're trying to send out signals that they're going to be the next Facebook or whatever. And I think there is a real, maybe not issue, but there's probably a tendency for financiers, people trying to find the next bet, that they're trying to find something new and they're trying to find growth. And for the last couple of years, crypto equaled growth. And now we're probably at the end of that cycle.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where the cycle goes to. I think it will be a very interesting time the next couple of years for crypto. And like I said, I think the key challenge is to just abstract away anything to do with crypto and onboard people onto the underlying tech without them realizing that this is what the tech is being used for. And if you can do that, then I think you can win what crypto is.
Albert, let's, as we finish up, let's return back to Binance. Verdicts, last word. What do you have to say?
Look, full disclosure, I should have said this at the top of the pod. I use Binance. I think the product is good, but it's just geared towards an institutional trader or someone who's like really deep in the space.
Yep.
Like Binance as a product is useful and fit for purpose, but it is not pleasant to use. I think not for just Binance, but other exchanges as a whole. They need to really up their game in terms of user experience as more people enter, you know, the crypto or kind of, you know, the digital currency, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get numbers on Binance because they're private, but, you know, in researching this episode, I had another re-look at Coinbase, which obviously we covered on a previous episode, but looking at the recent numbers, you know, in the last quarter, their trading volume declined by 44%. So they're really getting, you know, a lack of interest during this crypto winter. The amount of monthly transactions by users has decreased as well by a very significant amount. And if you look at their share price, this is Coinbase still, you know, they were $250 USD in January. Now they're sitting at $45 USD. Tough times to be a crypto exchange. Doesn't mean they're not going to be successful, but I think when I look at Binance, what would be really interesting to me was if they kept pathways open. The idea of having their own digital wallet to me is like a really interesting pathway. So I'm a little bit disappointed that they seem so focused on just being a trading platform, but there's no reason, you know, they can't acquire Trust Wallet in the future or basically put in their own at some point. So I'm still on hold for Binance, Diamond Hands, but I'm holding to wait and see what's going to happen. I'm not necessarily betting one way or the other.
Yeah. And, you know, it's probably worth, as we close this up, like this is purely a podcast for entertainment. It's not financial advice. Do your own research. All the kind of usual disclaimers that we'll put in the show notes and at the end of this. Like crypto is obviously a very risky area of financial services, financial institutions, financial, they're not financial products, but you get the gist.
You're such a lawyer, Albert. What's going on here?
I think, specifically in this case where there's just so much noise and there are people shilling and trying to make quick money.
In that world, there's only two people you can trust, Dan and Albert.
Exactly. Exactly. Maybe we should start our own crypto protocol, Dan and Albert Coin.
The fresh coin. I think it's going
to be. The fresh coin. I like it.
Yeah, so keep a lookout for that as it comes your way. But thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week. See ya.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week, we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn how companies operate and how investing works. Just a reminder, all information contained in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, financial, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Fresh Capital are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any opinions expressed in the show are not recommendations or advice. Please consult a licensed financial professional before you jump in. As always, we look forward to seeing you next week. See ya.